Just a note before we start. Our show talks about touchy subjects that may be difficult for some of our listeners. Take care of yourself. If you feel you need to seek help, see the links at the end of our show notes for resources.
Welcome to Touchy Subjects, the podcast that aims to make those awkward conversations around domestic and sexual violence just a little less awkward. I'm Sean.
I'm Allie.
And I'm Sierra.
And in today's episode, we're going to be discussing LGBTQ plus representation in media.
You know we love a good media discussion. We've done this quite a few times, and it's still Pride Month. And so we're focusing today's episode on LGBTQ representation in media because this is a really worthwhile discussion. We know how much media influences our beliefs and our culture, and this is the same and in some ways even more true when we talk about LGBTQ population.
So when it comes to media in general, what media is realistically supposed to do is mirror the society that we live in and show the trends and, you know, everything that we're so used to seeing. It's supposed to mirror real life. And for some of us, we don't have to worry about whether or not we're going to see representations of ourselves through media because it just happens so naturally for some reason. But with this conversation about the LGBTQ plus population and their representation in media, we ourselves have noticed a lot of trends that this population is very underrepresented in media. So we reached out on Twitter just to get some more insight from those who are part of the LGBTQ plus community. And it was really unique because we were able to get a lot of different perspectives about how they feel that they as individuals have been represented or if they've been represented at all in media. So we're going to get into that within today's discussion. But first, we're going to just jump into the problem of underrepresentation itself.
So when you have media that's supposed to be representative of the world that we live in, when you have people who are underrepresented in media, you're essentially erasing some of their identities, or you're then stereotyping their identities to look a very specific way. Because they're essentially just doing things to check a box. Say like, see, we got our gay character. See, we got our black character. We're good to go. And we're going to get in a little bit more about tokenization a little bit later in the episode. But when there's a lack of representation, it makes it difficult then for people to relate to characters that don't fit them. So like myself as a skinny, straight white dude, it's really easy for me to relate to Barry Allen in The Flash because he looks like me. That's a character like me. And I don't have to stretch very far to find a bunch of other characters who look and sound like me and act like me. But for people in the LGBT community, it's very few and far between often. And even when there is that representation, it's really not that great.
Yeah, when there is representation of LGBTQ individuals, it often ends up that it's stereotyped, right? And so real individuals in the real world looking for mirrored characters have a hard time finding authenticity with that because oftentimes media portrays LGBTQ individuals in a very stereotypical light. And we know that that's not the case for every individual who identifies as LGBTQ.
A lot of what we have seen in media when it comes to representing or just for TV shows, for example, to have an LGBTQ person within their show, it very much usually is the case that this person in the show is just there to serve as an LGBTQ person. And that's really all that there is. That's all that they're scripted to be, which is really unfortunate for any LGBTQ individuals who are watching and consuming this media, because all they're seeing is this character being their gender identity or being their sexual orientation, not actually being a real individual with hopes and dreams and jobs and families and all of that kind of stuff. So again, that's one of the problems of underrepresentation when we go ahead and try to view this.
Yeah, we know that people are multifaceted and somebody's sexuality or their gender identity doesn't define them as a whole person. But when these characters are written as only their sexuality or only their gender identity, it creates a misunderstanding and an unfair representation of the community as a whole. And again, we know that we pay attention to media. Society gets their, you know, we get our views and our opinions from media. And so if that's what we're seeing as a whole, it can become problematic.
And I think when directors and writers are creating LGBTQ characters, it's gotten a little bit better, like now versus how characters were written like in the early 90s. It's not the best, but there are better examples of good LGBTQ plus characters. And I think the creating a background or creating a character that's solely their sexuality is harmful, but it also ends up being a double-edged sword when you're writing these characters, because if you were to ignore a character who is part of the LGBTQ community, just ignore the experiences that they're going to experience by being a part of that community or having their coming out story. If you were to just ignore it, you've done a disservice to that character, because that is a huge part of a lot of people's lives. But if you were to just have that be the main focal point of that character without any other traits or personality or just behaviors other than they're doing these things because they're gay, that is when it becomes the problem. So like two good examples just from the Arrowverse on the CW is you have Dreamer in Supergirl and Sarah Lance and Ava Sharp in Legends of Tomorrow. Dreamer is a trans woman who comes out as trans. There is plot lines and story that goes along with her being trans, but it's not her sole character trait. There's a lot of other aspects to her character. On the flip side, you have Sarah Lance and Ava Sharp who are in a relationship together, but it's never really talked more about, or like, oh, they're just in a relationship together. That's it. It's just chalked up to that's who they are. While yes, Sarah does have a coming out story to her dad, it's more or less just her coming out to her dad and saying, well, I'm just happy you had somebody who was there to care about you, which is hopefully also the response that people are going to have when their own children come out to them as gay. But again, her whole character isn't around the fact that she's a lesbian or that she's bisexual, actually. It's just a part of who she is.
So, and Sean, in speaking about those couples, I think that's something important for us to touch on too, because one of the things that that is important in the work that we do is, and we know this, is that kids see what real relationships look like, right? In their own lives and mirrored in media. And so when we dissect what relationships look like in media, oftentimes they're all heterosexual, right? And if we want to go into it even further, it's most likely white heterosexual individuals, right? There's not a lot of representation either with LGBTQ individuals or with non-white people. And so this is problematic, because when we're only being shown and we're only seeing one type of relationship, it gives children the idea, right, that that's what a relationship is. And I think that this also kind of hinders really honest and necessary discussions in families about what sexuality is and what, you know, what relationships actually are supposed to look like.
You know, that actually goes into one of the tweet responses that we had got when we reached out. And essentially what was mentioned is that it has become so normal to just be seeing heterosexual couples in the media that people are starting to, you know, anytime that there is any sort of representation of an LGBTQ individual, you know, the first reaction of people is to be like, why does there always have to be a gay person? Or, You know, they're really pushing the sexuality thing on us or things like that. And oh my goodness, that argument just gets me because these are real people with real experiences and real, you know, gender identities, real sexual orientations, and they deserve representation just as much as any of the rest of us do. So, you know, the idea that, you know, this sort of representation is pushing an agenda on us is just ridiculous. And, you know, it might come into the fact that a lot of parents don't want to have this conversation with their kids. And maybe that's because they've hypersexualized LGBTQ couples in the first place.
But it also just ends up, it's just funny to me that you have parents who will be like, I don't want to have that discussion with my kids about seeing two guys in a relationship on TV. When you don't have that same mental process of, I don't want to have the discussion about this guy and girl who are in a couple or in a relationship together on TV. Because you've chalked that up to that's your norm. You've made this heteronormative belief system around relationships. So when it comes to an LGBTQ plus relationship, you're seeing that as something that is off or as something that is other than the norm. And then you're pushing that onto your kids. So you're helping your kids develop that same belief system.
And you know, that's funny that you mentioned that too, because the same parents that are having issues with, you know, their kids seeing LGBTQ couples are the same parents that are asking their two-year-olds if they have a girlfriend or putting the little boys in a ladies' man t-shirt or things like that, where that's just so second nature to them that they don't understand it's the same thing. And I hope that, you know, with this podcast and with this discussion that we're able to break down those barriers and break down those stereotypes. But it's just kind of ironic to me now that you mentioned that part.
Right. It's like, you know, if you find yourself becoming uncomfortable when you see a same-sex couple holding hands or kissing in a TV show, but you don't feel uncomfortable when an opposite gendered couple is doing that when you're around your kids, that might be something to take a real hard look at on, you know, inside and examine, why is this making me uncomfortable? Because essentially it's the same thing. Love is love and relationships are relationships. And the more that we, you know, sexualize LGBTQ couples, the more skewed their representation is, which is not fair.
I think it's important to mention that some of the tweet responses that we got were, you know, these individuals stating how badly they wish that when they were younger, they were able to see representation of themselves and that they were able to see, you know, normal queer people being normal people, and, you know, having healthy relationships and falling in and out of love just like everybody else, becoming successful just like everybody else. And, you know, some of the people who ended up responding to that tweet said that if they would have had representation like that growing up, then they, you know, wouldn't have denied that part of their lives and denied that part of who they are for so long. I think it's important that we do jump into this part of the conversation now and kind of try to combat some of these things.
And that kind of speaks to the problem that we have when you do stereotype groups of people and then you use those stereotypes as your means of representation. If you're going to portray a gay man as the overly flamboyant, overly articulate character who appears more feminine and also like all this, like your stereotypical gay character, if that's the only gay representation that you get in media, that's your viewpoint then of how a gay person looks, behaves, acts, everything. That's a caricature that I'm seeing on screen right now. That's not who I am. Sure, there may be your stereotypical gay man. There might be them, those men in the world. That's nothing against them. But not everyone's going to fit that box. Not everyone's going to fit that stamp of, these are all the things that are required for me to look or be gay. I got all of them. And if I'm trying to find myself in a show, it's not going to be with that character then.
Right. And let's kind of break down just quickly some of these stereotypes that we see most often for, I think, we can talk about specifically gay men and lesbian women, because I think those, up until, you know, the recent history in media, those were the LGBTQ individuals that were most often represented in media, especially starting in the early 90s up until the mid 2000s. But for gay men, the stereotype that is often portrayed is that of, like Sean said, very flamboyant, very articulate, well-spoken, somebody that is that has style, right? Dresses maybe more feminine than other men do, right? Maybe they don't have interest in sports or in cars. They probably have interest in things like literature and cooking and those sort of things. And that's the stereotype that is often perpetuated for men. For women, it's a little bit different, right? For gay women.
Yeah, so with women, we have this dynamic that we have set up to where we are perfectly fine and allow for a tomboy to exist in our world, and we don't necessarily stereotype her as somebody who is going to be lesbian. We allow for those things to exist. It's not a big deal. If we see a girl who is excited about sports, we applaud her, like, awesome, that's great, you like sports. If we were to, on the flip side though, if we were to see a guy who was interested in like makeup or something, like, there's something off about that guy, we don't really know about that,
must be gay.
Yeah, we've created the belief that tomboys are okay and good, which then makes it a little bit more difficult to really recognize if a lesbian character is being actually portrayed on screen, or if it's just going into that trope of she's just a tomboy who's straight. Generally, when you use the tomboy trope, it's going to be for one of those two reasons. But if you have a feminine male character in a show, you can almost guarantee that he is being portrayed that way in an effort to have some kind of coding as being gay.
So with all of that being said, let's kind of quickly talk about queerbaiting, because essentially what queerbaiting is media thriving off of these stereotypes and making a false or a very faint promise of having LGBTQ representation within their films or books or whatever that form of media is. It's a way to get people's attention and make them think that they're going to be rejected in one way or another. But then once you start, you know, getting into that, what really happens is just that those stereotypes are presented where there's a male character who doesn't actually say straight out that they're gay or, you know, whatever the case might be. And instead, it's just that stereotype being presented as somebody who's very well dressed, very flamboyant, very well spoken, and things like that. So, you know, again, that's a way that media gets an LGBT audience to, you know, come and view their media, even though there's really that only a fake or a vague promise of what they'll be showing.
Right. Of representation. I think one of the examples that comes to mind for me of queerbaiting that's pretty recent is the live action of Beauty and the Beast with Emma Watson. And there was a lot of hype and talk about Gaston's sidekick. What's his name?
LeFou,
thank you. There was a lot of hype about it. There was articles that were going around that's basically, is he or isn't he gay? And when you actually get into the movie and watch it, it's not really addressed, right? He has those typical mannerisms of a stereotypically portrayed gay man, right? He's a little bit more feminine. He's very interested in Gaston, but there's nothing concrete. And really, that's pretty much the only thing that audience cares about with this particular character is the fact that is he or isn't he gay? And what kind of representation is that for real life individuals in the LGBTQ community as they're watching, you know, this movie, and all you can think about when you see this character is, ooh, is he really gay? Did Disney really do that?
Well, and it brings up an interesting point of, for a long time, that was really the only representation that LGBTQ member, like the community was going to get, was that they had to kind of code characters as being gay. It's not necessary anymore. It's perfectly acceptable to have openly gay characters in your show. And it is, to me, it's wrong to just trick an audience into wondering or questioning if a person is gay or not when it's very easy for you to say, yes, this character is gay in the actual show or movie. They had an opportunity in Beauty and the Beast to say LeFou was gay. When he was dancing with a guy towards the end of the movie, that was their chance, and they didn't take it. It's like other examples that I can think of off the top of my head. Matthias Shaw and Flynn Farwood in World of Warcraft. Obviously, neither one of you have played World of Warcraft, so
definitely
I am on my own island here as a nerd. But it's been around for a while now in the forums and this the World of Warcraft playing community of like, are these two characters gay? It's hinted at that there might be something, but we don't know how far they're going to take that in the game. Other example, in Star Wars, you have Finn and Poe, also coded that way to look like they could be in a relationship or there could be a relationship spark at some point, but that is as far as they go.
I think we should back up here and define. So we defined queer baiting, which is an important term when we're talking about, you know, LGBTQ representation in media. But we've also, Sean, you've used the term coded or gay coded, gay coding a couple of times now. And I think that we need to define that because that's also a really crucial part of this representation.
So gay coding being basically just taking stereotypical viewpoints of what a gay person would act or look like and then portraying them on a character just to have them be there without explicitly saying that this person is gay. It makes it easy for them then to say, like, see, we have this representation of somebody who might be gay, but they never really outwardly say that the character is gay in the show, movie, book, whatever. So, like, think of Hades from the Hercules animated film. Never explicitly said he's gay, but if you had to guess, you'd probably guess gay because they've coded Hades in a way to behave in those stereotypical ways of what we think about when we think of a gay person.
So when we were, when I'm learning about gay coding, something that I found really interesting is, you know, because Sean just mentioned Hades, looking at especially a lot of Disney films, but they're not the only ones that do this. Oftentimes, villains are gay-coded in films. And I think that's something really interesting that we should point out and talk about because it kind of blew my mind.
You know, it's really interesting that you've mentioned and noticed that because in a lot of different forms of media, this is the case, that the evil characters are played by or are gay-coded. And the reason for this is just the fact that LGBTQ individuals have been villainized for so long that by creating villains in these films who are coded to be LGBTQ, it then goes ahead and, again, gives the audience a reason to be uneasy by their characters and, again, just enhances the fact that they are villains in the in, you know, the movies or whatever media it is that they're within.
It's also really interesting that we take the vilification.
I think that's the right word here. Vilification. I don't know. Maybe we've been using English, that apparently. Wrong the whole time. forgive us if we have, but we'll use vilification.
But it's interesting that the vilification of the LGBTQ community is taken so far as to a lot of prominent representations of Satan in media are used as gay-coded characters. It's like, think of the robot devil from Futurama or him in the Powerpuff Girls.
Oh, the Powerpuff Girls. That was the first one that came to mind for me. He is so, it is so gay-coded that's the first, like, devil depiction that pops into my head when I think of cartoons. And, you know, the thing is, I don't know that media companies are intentionally doing this. And I think we should talk about that because, you know, in our work, a lot of what we talk about is simply socialization, right? It's about our culture and about what we all grew up with. We all grew up in the same society, right? So I don't think that media companies, like especially Disney, I don't think that they're trying to outwardly make their villains gay, right? Like it's not a conscious decision. But as we're examining media, it's absolutely a pattern, right?
And I'll agree. I don't necessarily think that a lot of media intentionally makes it this way. But I do think that they have the responsibility to recognize these trends and then also recognize that they need to be more inclusive in more realistic ways and making sure, you know, like we mentioned in Beauty and the Beast, they had the opportunity to mention that LeFou was a gay character, but they didn't. It's like they're more so going for the idea of showing inclusivity without actually being inclusive, which again is just harmful.
And we've kind of talked a little bit about just all like the negative representation that exists for the LGBT community in media because it's overly abundant, especially when you're looking at queer-coded characters or they're just shows lack of desire or willingness to say, yes, this character is for sure gay. But there has been a lot of good representation too that pops up. It's just you have to look for it. And especially with TV shows now, with their willingness to actually say, yes, this character is gay, it's a lot easier to find those characters because, like you said, Sierra, they have a responsibility for this representation. And some places are actually taking it now.
Yeah. And I think that this has probably happened, you know, in the last maybe 10, 15 years, more so than it did in the early 90s. And we keep referencing the 90s and the early 90s when we're talking about this, because quite frankly, the LGBTQ population was just not existent in media before then. I mean, maybe here and there, but by and large, it wasn't. But in the early 90s and mid 90s.
And if there was any representation in like the 90s, it was typically used as the butt of a joke in the shows. Like the easiest example I can think of is from Ace Ventura. There's a whole scene in one of the Ace Ventura films where he's like, she's Henry Finkel. She's a man. And they use this trans character as simply just the butt of a joke. And that's the representation that they get.
Well, and you know, you guys know that I've been itching to bring this up, but in the 90s, we had lots of sitcoms, and in those sitcoms, they were trying, I don't know if trying is the right word, but they were including gayness and queerness and LGBTQ storylines in those sitcoms. However, looking back on it from a lens from today, it was pretty harmful, right? So Friends is my go-to reference for this. You know, at the time in the first or second, I think it was the second season of Friends, Susan and Carol get married, you know, Ross's ex-wife and her partner, they get married. This is like the second or third time I think that a gay marriage was shown on network TV ever. And so this was really huge, right? But even around that episode, it wasn't the center of the episode, right? All of the supporting characters, it was more about their reactions and their jokes to the fact that these two characters were getting married. And so there's a lot of examples from Friends. And I know that the writers have said, you know, we thought we were being inclusive at the time. We thought that we were doing right by including these storylines back then, but we could have done better, right? And so when we're talking about these things, we have to look at the times, but that doesn't excuse the fact that these shows that were maybe created in the 90s still have some really homophobic undertones or overtones, very overt overtones.
Yeah, you can't ignore the context in which a show, movie, whatever was written in because it helps frame that show because that's when it was written. But you also can't ignore the fact that art is going to be interpreted differently based on the audience or whoever is viewing it. So like a show from the 90s, well, yes, you can understand like, oh, it was written in the 90s, so that was the best they could do. you also got to understand that if I'm watching that show in 2020, I have a different lens that I'm viewing this show from now, which is also part of the reason I don't like Friends. It's like, I didn't watch Friends, any episodes of Friends, until like 2015, and watching it, I was like, this is awful. It's like, the jokes aren't funny. The jokes are kind of rude. And I was just like, it's not my cup of tea.
All right. So before we get too far ahead of ourselves, I think that we should take a quick step back while we're talking about representation in general, especially giving specific examples of representation, whether it be well-intentioned or good or bad or otherwise. But a lot of the things that we've been talking about, like gay coding and stereotypes and everything within, within that, it does a really good job at making the attempt to portray lesbian and gay characters within media. However, the rest of the LGBTQ community is not represented well. For example, we did have another person who responded to our tweet looking for insight, stating that they're asexual and they don't ever see any sort of representation for themselves. That is until, however, they said that they read a book called Let's Talk About Love. So if anybody's interested in that, there's a nice little suggestion. But, you know, it's a good point because, for example, I know as somebody who consumes media that I can't think of an example of a time that I've seen an somebody who's asexual portrayed on media, let alone being a main character. And, you know, the same goes for transgender individuals, where there's not a whole lot of great representation for them as well. So from here on out, we're going to kind of give some more examples of different characters in media and address how well they do at, you know, portraying different characters and different identities.
Yeah. As someone who spends, I'm pretty sure, all of my free time watching TV shows, movies, or playing video games and surrounding myself in just all things media, I can only really think of one asexual example, and it's Todd from BoJack Horseman.
Not familiar.
Nope. You guys need to watch more shows.
Well, stop, why? Stop rewatching. You watch them for us.
Stop rewatching exactly. Friends for the 12th time.
Listen, I watch Friends in the office over and over again because it ends the same every single time. Okay? We're living in a very anxiety-filled world. I need consistency.
Feel that.
But Todd and BoJack Horseman saying that he's asexual, and even just like looking at like through the comments and stuff on YouTube of like when Todd does come out to BoJack, it's a bunch of people who identify themselves as asexual saying like, this is the representation that I wanted. It's like, I haven't seen a character before Todd represent who I am. And like the transgender example, I can think of two at the top of my head being, like I said earlier, Dreamer from Supergirl. And then,
I agree. And we're talking about trans folk. I think that the first representation I saw on screen, besides Friends, really, you know, there's some trans references in Friends, but the first real depiction that I saw was Sophia Bursette in Orange is the New Black. And this is a fairly modern TV show. And I know that the show got a lot of attention for its portrayal of Sophia Bursette, mostly because Laverne Cox herself is a trans woman, right? And so there was this portrayal of a trans woman in a women's prison by a real trans woman. And I think that's something worthwhile to talk about when we're talking about true representation in media, because Laverne Cox was able to bring her real life experiences, her real life portrayal to the role.
And I think that's one of the more important facets of creating good representation of characters in media, is that you need to have characters who have those experiences of the character on screen that you're trying to portray in order to do that authentically. It's like Nia Nal in Supergirl. The actress who plays Nia Nal is a trans woman. And then Trevor in Shameless is portrayed by Elliot Fletcher, who is a trans man. So using the life experiences of these characters so they have an understanding of what their character is already going to be going through makes the representation better and makes it more authentic and relatable.
You know, if we want media to mirror real life, the only way to do that is to truly incorporate the life views and experiences of people who have actually lived it. We know that, right? And so I think that especially with, you know, these examples of trans folk who portray trans folk, it is incredibly important that that was the case. And I hope that as we move forward, that more LGBTQ individuals are cast in those roles to give that authenticity and that voice that hasn't been there for the community.
So when we get into this conversation about good examples of LGBTQ representation within media, I think we should touch on the fact that just within the 2018 to 19 season of broadcast television, there was only 8.8% of series regulars who were lesbian, gay, or bisexual, and that itself was considered good representation. So again, just in this discussion, I think that this should be a point where we talk about, or at least mention that there needs to be more representation in general of LGBTQ individuals, as well as good examples like we're going to get into. For example, the CW was named as the most inclusive broadcast network. And one of my favorite shows from the CW is How to Get Away with Murder, which LGBTQ individuals are very much a normal, you know, they're very much part of that series. And it was just, you know, put in there as a very normal thing that, you know, these are the people, these are the main characters. They're also gay. They're also bisexual. And I thought, just from my perspective, that that show did a really great job at showing inclusivity and also the ins and outs of real relationships, whether it was through Annalise and any of her partners or Connor and Oliver always, you know, supporting each other and showing, you know, those other aspects of relationship struggles and things like that. So that's one example from the CW that I personally find to be a good representation.
And speaking of the CW, I now get to jump on my favorite relationship currently in media, of Sarah Lance and Ava Sharp. So welcome to the Avalanche podcast now. But their relationship is shown as a very good representation of just what a relationship in general looks like. It just happens that both of them are women in the relationship. They have their struggles, they have their problems, they work through them, they're very loving and caring of each other. Sure, they're sometimes selfish, but that tends to be what most relationships are going to look like. Sarah Lance being this, a quote from somebody who I watched on YouTube, this bisexual badass bird, because she is the white canary, is this very strong, independent woman. And then you have Ava Sharp, who is, again, a strong, independent woman, and the two of them just coming together for the relationship where they fill in where the other one is lacking, where Ava is too, like, Ava is more uptight or, like, business-oriented, and Sarah is, like, the let's go with the flow and see what happens type of character. So they work really well together, and it's not very often that do you have even a good, healthy relationship being the main relationship in a show. But when your main relationship is a relationship between two women that is portrayed as very healthy, that's even more exceedingly rare.
So, to kind of wrap all of this up, I want to talk about my favorite show example that's current of LGBTQ representation, and that is Brooklyn Nine-Nine. So there's actually two really great examples in Brooklyn Nine-Nine of LGBTQ relationships. One is, of course, Captain Holt, who is an openly gay black man. He's the captain of the 99th precinct, right? And his character often talks of the struggles that he had coming out in the 80s as an openly gay black man. And so I think that's one thing to talk about, because when we're examining representation of LGBTQ population, like I said earlier, oftentimes it's white people. Okay. And so to have a person of color represented in a TV show as a gay person also recognizes the intersectionality in real life, because there are plenty of LGBTQ population or LGBTQ individuals that are non-white. Another example in that show is Rosa Diaz, Detective Diaz. She is a Latinx woman and she identifies as bisexual. And this is actually really interesting because she comes out as bisexual during the show. And the show itself did a really great job of depicting what that coming out process looked like, and it didn't tokenize it, right? But it made it a normal part of her life as both a detective and a woman, right? Just this is her, this is her life. But I do appreciate that the show showed two people of color as part of the LGBTQ population.
And I think that's one of the main takeaways we want you all to have today, is that when there is actual, genuinely good representation in media, it makes those characters better. They're not being tokenized. They're not being thrown in to check a box. Because while, yes, that was all that the LGBTQ community could probably hope for in the early 90s, that's not all they can hope for now. You can actively have these characters on screen done well and have their characters be meaningful to this community. But if you just continue to tokenize this group or to check that box, nothing's going to change and you're not going to have that meaningful or good representation. So thank you all for listening today. Feel free to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Touchy Subs Pod to keep up to date when we have new episodes going out and whatever resources we decide to post. If you have any questions or comments, please email them to touchysubjectspodcast@gmail.com.
And in the meantime, don't be afraid to challenge, ask, and discuss when it comes to touchy subjects.